WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. John Darton remembers leaving Poland with the smell of tear gas in the air. Martial law had been in effect for 9 months. Lech Wałęsa was under house arrest. Thousands of union and labor leaders were in jail or underground. The year was 1982, Darton's third and final year covering Poland for the New York Times. He won a Pulitzer Prize for his coverage of the rise of Solidarity and the imposition of martial law. Now Darton is the New York Times London bureau chief. Last month, he returned to Poland. He spent 3 weeks investigating life after communism in the country that's been called the success story of Eastern Europe. As soon as his plane landed in Poland, he was amazed by how much things had changed.
First of all, the plane led directly into the terminal, which was unusual. Before, there was an older airport, and you sort of got on a bus which drove kicking fumes right up to the airport, and you had to get out, stand in a long line, waiting for the immigration and customs officials to search you. They almost always did. The immigration official used to have a mirror up above the people in the line that he could check from time to time. I never quite knew what he was looking for in the mirror. He could only see the tops of the heads. Then he would look through your passport very leisurely, checking every page, skeptically seeing where you've been, checking your name on lists and probably on computers, and then finally, reluctantly grant you a stamp to enter the country. And you'd have to go through the whole process again with the baggage officials, and it took forever. This time I arrived in a spanking new airport. The immigration officials just basically waved me and everyone else through, looking at the American passport very, very quickly. And there were signs in English and loudspeakers booming, everything functioning perfectly, and it was all very smooth. So you get hit by the changes even before you technically set foot inside the country.
And what about when you set foot inside the country? What had changed?
Well, almost on the surface, of course, everything, because there are billboards all over the place on the ride in from the airport, billboards with, women in bathing suits drinking Coca-Cola, billboards for Marlboro, for all kinds of products, car lots on both sides of the street selling Fords and all sorts of vehicles that weren't in the country before. Even car lots downtown selling Mercedes and Alfa Romeos. I was struck by things that I did not see, namely the long lines. There used to be these incredible lines in front of the stores snaking all the way down the streets. And you would think that would lend a kind of life to the street to have all those people there, but it didn't. It was a kind of static situation before. Now there were crowds, and they were kind of bustling about. It looked like everyone's in a hurry. You imagine they're all, on their way to an appointment somewhere, probably to hatch some kind of business deal. There are a lot of shops out on the streets and new boutiques, Christian Dior and major Western outlets have opened up. So the whole city has a different kind of look and a different feel to it.
These new boutiques, can anybody in Poland afford to buy things in them?
You have touched the problem right there. Before, 11, 12, 13 years ago, they had shoddy stores with very little merchandise, and everyone had a lot of money, zlotys, almost worthless money that was non-convertible. Now they have these wonderful stores overflowing with all kinds of goods, VCRs and Western imports and everything else. But, of course, the people don't have the money to buy them. I don't know which is better. Polls would say, many of them, it's better to at least have the opportunity to work for the goods. I think it probably causes, in the long run, less discontent because it tends to make people want to work more.
Did you see a new kind of poverty in Poland?
Yes, absolutely. It's not highly visible, and it's still not comparable to what you might see walking cross town in New York. But they do have, for the first time, soup kitchens opening up, usually in the bowels of railroad stations somewhere. There's one in Katowice. There's one at the Central Station in Warsaw, although it's just closed down. They have special restaurants where people can obtain vouchers and hand them in to get meals for about 1,000 or 10,000 zlotys, which is a paltry amount. Those who are most affected tend to be pensioners, people living on fixed incomes who've been wiped out by inflation, which was rampant for years now, and people who live in small towns that are dependent on single industries, say an industry which used to make armaments for the Warsaw Pact. And these people are indeed suffering, but you don't see them right away, and you don't see them walking through the center of Warsaw.
Are the poor suffering any more now than they were under communism?
Oh, that's a difficult question to answer, but I think there's certainly the conviction that they are. Before, there was, don't forget, this whole system in place to catch people if they were on the very bottom so that they couldn't actually hit the hard ground if they were falling. There were systems, guaranteed employment, of course, ranking first among them, but systems of social support, all kinds of things, all kinds of benefits, stores where the price of meat and the price of bread and the price of milk and the price of everything else was subsidized so that it was kept low, and all kinds of benefits for workers in terms of vacations and books for their school children and a kind of a swaddling clothing from the cradle to the grave. Now, it wasn't a good system in the sense that it wasn't efficient, and it certainly didn't encourage production or even creativity, and we all know what it led to. But probably from the sense of feeling secure in the world, it certainly beats what they had right now, although I don't think many Poles, in fact, I doubt any Poles, none I talked to, would want to return to it.
Last week, the Polish parliament rejected a bill to privatize industries. Do you think that this means a setback for Poland's advance into a market economy?
Well, personally, yes, I do. Although just in the last day, in fact, yesterday, it's made clear that the government is going to resubmit the bill, changing it somewhat, but basically keeping its the core of it. To try and get it through Parliament again. And I think ultimately in some form it will pass. I think it's important because, like most of the countries of Eastern Europe, Poland has still not solved the basic dilemma of what to do with all these state-owned companies that were so inefficient, how to get them to convert quickly to private companies. They've been doing it up to now on a piecemeal basis, one by one, persuading Western companies to come in and take a look and make a bid for this company. That's a long and rather clumsy process. So Poland has fallen far behind in terms of privatizing companies. Of some 3,500 companies, I think only a handful have been really privatized, and only about 16 are in the new Warsaw Stock Exchange. So the intent of this bill was to take 600 of the best companies, although not the largest, and at one fell swoop to privatize them all under a complicated system that would basically have them managed by trusts in the hands of Western experts so that they could turn into profit-making efficient enterprises.
Why do some people oppose this bill that would have privatized many industries?
You know, that's a really interesting and difficult question. Whenever I asked it, I got different answers, and I began to think there was something very basic going on that was eluding me, something that often happens, I'm afraid. But in this case, what had happened, I think, was a growing, almost unstated sense on the part of a lot of workers that that privatization can represent a threat. First of all, there is the threat of unemployment, because when factories are taken over by Western interests, there are often layoffs. The workers are aware of it. It comes as no surprise. They're often warned about it, but it's deemed as a necessary evil to strip the company down and turn it into a kind of forceful creative enterprise. But more than that, I think the workers had a strange sense that somehow the factories were not fetching the proper prices. Don't forget, for years they had worked there. Some cases their parents and grandparents have worked there. And there is a sense that these companies have been gaining in value over time rather than losing in value, because there's no concept of what a Westerner would call depreciation. They thought all that huge machinery and all those thick walls of those textile mills were worth billions and billions. And when they were up for sale, they simply couldn't understand, one, that nobody was interested, or two, that they would only be willing to pay, you know, several score millions of dollars. And that's given rise to a kind of an undercurrent of anxiety, in a sense maybe that outside interests are profiting, who knows who they are, the sort of dark side of Polish history, where there are unseen forces at work that are somehow taking advantage of the honest working person.
Do you think of Poland as the success story of the countries that broke away from the Soviet Union?
Well, I do, and I'm not alone in that. If you look at the statistics, the economy seems to have turned a corner and done so only very recently. Hungary and the Czech Republic, of course, are both doing fairly well, but they are really altogether different animals. They're much smaller. It's not comparable in just population or industrial output to Poland. Poland is a large, powerful country, and if it can do it, then it's a real lesson for Russia and other countries. And just in the last quarter of the last year, suddenly Poland, which was the first country to adopt what they call shock therapy, you know, suddenly removing all the subsidies and making the zloty convertible, Poland seems to have suddenly started performing. Its GNP went up, which is amazing. It'll probably be the first country in the area to really do that. More significantly, its industrial output went up for the first time after a deep plunge that lasted for years. So there are those who think it's turned a corner. And if it can, say, pass the privatization bill, it would really take off.
My guest is New York Times reporter John Darton. He returned to Poland last month. He reported from Poland for The Times from 1979 to 82. We'll be right back. This is Fresh Air. My guest is New York Times reporter John Darton. Poland doesn't seem to have been torn apart by the ethnic divisions that have torn apart so many other countries that were with the Soviet Union.
Well, that again, you've touched a key feature of the country. Poland, for a variety of reasons, which we all know very well, happens to be totally homogeneous right now. Its boundaries have shifted, of course, from their pre-war state several hundred miles to the west. There is no large ethnic minority of any sort, including, of course, Jews. Does not have sizable minorities from any of the neighboring countries. There are some Germans in one area. There are illegal Russians crossing the border all the time. But basically, it is 97% Catholic, white, Polish.
Well, let's talk about the Catholic Church. When you were in Poland reporting for the New York Times from 79 to 82, the Catholic Church was a very important meeting and organizing place for the underground. What's the role of the Catholic Church in Polish society now?
Oh, it has changed markedly, and that is something that strikes you as soon as you enter the country. Back in 79 and 80 and 81, the church, which in Polish history has been the repository of sort of Polish nationalism and Polish identity, served primarily as a forum of opposition to the communists. It's a role it had become very comfortable with under many, various communist leaders. And it was almost a patriotic duty to go to church to express your opposition to the communists. The church, in other words, had a tremendous drawing power. On Sundays, masses were packed. The whole very, very few Poles would admit to being unbelievers unless, of course, they were in the government. And Cardinal Wyszynski, who was then primate, exerted a tremendous influence over the daily life of many Poles. Now, today, it's interesting that with the Communist Party gone, the Roman Catholic Church is probably the single most powerful institution in the country.
Poland is a Catholic country, but do Catholics in Poland want the Church exerting this much influence over their cultural and political lives?
I think not. I have heard over and over that they did not. And in fact, it was the situation that existed before was this kind of interesting stalemate in which everyone benefited. People often disobeyed the moral strictures of the Church and then went to confession for absolution. But the means, if a woman wanted an abortion, the means of getting an abortion was quite easy. It was all state done. It could be done very quickly, and there were no problems. And then she would often go to the church and confess. And the confession, of course, would be received. Now it's much, much more complicated because it's extremely hard to get an abortion, and the church, of course, fought hard to make it so and will continue fighting to make it even harder. So I think the role of the church in daily life is much stronger than it was in the past in a strange way, even though you now notice fewer people going to church and a decline in vocations, say, fewer people entering the priesthood. So the grip of the church on the kind of the moral conscience of the people has been loosened to some extent, even while its political grip, I think, has been strengthened.
When you were in Poland, I'm sure a lot of the dissidents were some of your most important sources. Did you go back and revisit some of those people and see how they like the new Poland?
I did, yes, and they're all doing very well in the new Poland, or at least many of them. A surprising number of people have been elected to parliament, people who I just remember as being sort of ragamuffins meeting on street corners just as they were let out of jail cells. It's a kind of shock to go back and see someone who you knew as a solidarity leader and a very articulate man, but basically a man totally outside the system, to see him as the Minister of Defense in his office with a crossed swords over a tapestry and these stern portraits on the wall, to go in and suddenly you're hugged by the Minister of Defense, who says, "I can't quite believe it either." He described how difficult it was to convince the army that he wasn't really going to purge them from top to bottom. And he said, "We didn't really have much to do with the army. We knew the police quite well because they arrested us all the time, but we didn't know much about the army." That's surprising to see that.
Did you visit any of the former communist officials who you knew in the 70s and 80s when you were in Poland?
I did, yes. In fact, a lot of them now have considerable amount of time on their hands, so it was very easy to speak with them.
Were they doing well? Were they prospering in the new society?
No. They looked a bit, perhaps it was my own imagination, but they looked quite a bit older. Some of them, none of them seem to be actually suffering. They have pensions, but it's pretty hard to find a communist in Poland these days, someone who will admit to being a communist. One friend of mine said it was a bit like finding a Nazi in post-war Germany. They've just all gone. Some of them have converted and are actually sort of working with the new parliament. Others are out of a job but writing their memoirs. General Jaruzelski is working on a book. I interviewed him, and he seemed contrite about martial law at the same time that he was still justifying the necessity of it. The very contemplative, apologetic, unlike, of course, Moscow today, where there is a hardcore element that seems to be trying to turn the great ship around. The Poles now realize that they were cruising in the wrong waters, and they're looking back and sort of wondering if it could have been different.
Is there any fear in Poland that if the communists reasserted their control in Moscow, that there would be danger in Poland?
There is, but not for the reason you might think. The idea of a return to communism in Poland is unthinkable. Unlike Moscow, as an ideology, there was always the sense that it was imposed from the outside. In fact, Stalin himself once said that communism fits Poland the way a saddle fits a cow. It just never took root there. As many people know, agriculture was never communalized. It remained in private hands, and religion was always strong. And Poland is almost the only country that never constructed a statue to Stalin. So communism never sank deep roots in Poland in the same way that it did, say, next door. And I don't think it could ever come back. What Poles now worry about in their dark moments is that there will be tremendous upheaval to the east, not just in Russia, but in Ukraine or Belarus.
Places on Poland's border.
Exactly. And what they'll be faced with is an influx of refugees, especially if their border to Germany, the Polish border to Germany, is cut off, that could cause them problems.
Is there anything you'd want to add to how you think changes there might affect Poland?
Well, they're bound to. All along, when I look back now, when I left Poland back in 82, I couldn't conceive of what would happen. I knew there was massive discontent in the country, and I thought it might bubble up at some point, and there'd be perhaps even an insurrection that would be put down with force. I never could have conceived that it would be Moscow that would have changed and that would have caused all the changes in the so-called satellite countries. So this time, I am convinced we have to watch Moscow very, very closely, because obviously it couldn't reestablish its rule in the same way over Poland and Hungary and Czech and the Slovak Republic. But it certainly, if it becomes a center of chaos or anarchy, will affect their lives immeasurably.
John Darton, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you very much, Terry.
John Darton received a 1982 Pulitzer Prize for his coverage of Poland. He's now the New York Times London bureau chief. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.